going to let lesbian visibility be organized with other lesbians around the world. And I think the UN is our next arena. I want to close by saying that everybody here is here today for ourselves, but we're also here for the hundreds and thousands at home who couldn't come, and we're here for those pioneers who came before us, the brave women in the 1950s and the brave gay men who started Daughters of Bilitis and Mattachine in an era of McCarthyism. And if we ever get discouraged, if we ever think for one minute that times are hard, just think about what it was like to be an open lesbian or gay man starting an organization in the 1950s or in the period before that. We have always survived, and we are not only going to survive, we are going to move forward, and we are going to lead, and America and the world will never be the same because of it. Thank you.
Entertainer. She has only put out four albums, but I have played those four albums so often that I had to buy four more albums because I wore out the first four. When I am depressed, I put on these albums. When I need strength and courage, I put on these albums. When my relationships break up, I put on these albums because nothing and nobody gives me the strength and the inspiration and the courage as does the music and politics of Hollineer.
Hello. I wish you could see yourselves. You are like wonderful helium balloons about to rise up into the sky. J.T. Thomas is with me today playing the piano. We have to get the piano to work. Hold on. Well, while she's doing that, I'll tell you that JT and I and a woman named Susan Freundlich are on tour around the country for a nuclear-free future. And we are traveling to about 30 cities. So if we end up anywhere near you, please stop by and visit us. It's a coalition of women's groups, anti-nuke groups, disabled groups, and the hearing-impaired community all against the nuclear mentality. Five foot two, eyes of blue. Oh, what those 5 feet can do. Has anybody seen my gal? She looks grand, she looks fine. Organizing on the gay rights line. Has anybody seen my gal? Now, if you run into now I'm going to get serious. I'm a working woman, and they call me 9 to 5. What that means is I work full time, trying to survive. First I take care of boss's business, and then I go home and take care of mine. Oh, I'm a working woman, and they call me 9 to 5. I file a lot, smile a lot, yes sir, have a good day. On my seat, on my feet, deadline do not delay. I got phone-itis sin, spite of us they put in an extra line. I gotta file faster, type faster, whiteout is clogging my mind. And without me, the boss would be totally at a loss. I'd like some respect to be reflected in the check. There are so many lesbians and gay men working in clerical work who have to stay in the closet, because if they don't, they will get fired and they get sexual harassment. And it's a part of the workforce that is huge. Many of you here are probably part of it. And please don't call me honey. Don't grab me as you walk by, dodging your passes just makes me angry. It's hard. What that means is I'll work full time, trying to survive. First I take care of boss's business, and then I go home and take care of mine. Oh, I'm a working woman, and they call me 9 to 5. Harvey Milk has died, and so we came together to ease our pain inside. He thought our lives were beautiful and we had nothing to hide. Now we all must carry on the dreams, they clearly never die. It could have been me, but instead it was you. So I'll keep doing the work he was doing.
We're winding down now, coming to the end of our live broadcast from the National March on Washington for Lesbians and Gay Men. Want to give you our production credits. Our producer has been Bill Bogan. The director has been Wesley Horner. Our engineers, Skip Pizzi, Eric Epstein, Eileen Griffin, and Lee Garlington. Our production helpers, Alex Van Oss, Bruce Pennington, David Aiken, Joan Sprague, Jane Cluey, Hedy Swanson and John O'Neill, Fred Goldhammer, Art Ayrton, Fred Brungard. On our remote mics, we've had David Winyard, Amy Sands, and Isaac Jackson. And the three anchors here have been Moira Rankin, Greg Gordon. My name is Lucia Chappell.
And we would like to give special thanks to Tommy Lithincombe. I'm Moira Rankin from the Sophie's Parlor Media Collective, broadcast here in Washington, D.C. on WPFW. In the background is Holly Neer.
Independently, and I look to you.
Washington, D.C., you've been listening to the rally at the National March for Lesbian and Gay Rights. This program was produced by the Stonewall Nation Media Collective and by Pacifica Station for member station KPFT Houston, which is solely responsible for its content. This is the Station Program Exchange.
Oh, there's something about the women. There's something about time. Oh, there's something about the women. You gotta do that something. something with courage, something about the women, something about the women in my life. We are a gentle, angry people, singing, singing for our lives. Come sing with us.
We are a gentle, angry people, singing, singing for our lives. We are a gay
so we can have all gay and lesbian rights together.
We are an anti-sexist people, singing, singing for our lives. We are an anti-sexist people, singing, singing for our lives.
Thank you very much. Be courageous this year.
Hallelujah. J.T. Thomas, Meg Christian. Okay. Hallelujah.
Thank you. And thanks to Robin Flower for being such a wonderful hostess today. She's an incredible MC. I was asked to talk to you a little about money. Money is something that is a very frustrating and difficult situation to talk about because there is a shortage of it among people and an excess of among power. And the problem that we're facing with money, and there are going to be people walking around with buckets and cans here asking you for money, is that we end up getting charged twice. First of all, you pay taxes to a system that oppresses you. And then you have to pay money into the cans to an organization that tries to protect you.
But if, in fact, you choose to withhold money from one of those two organizations, I hope you will not withhold it from this one, rather withhold it from the other one. If everybody here put in a couple dollars each, minimally, we would not leave the gay march in debt. But there are going to be some people who could not put any in because it took everything in their life to get here. So some of you have got to cover for them, because that's what we need to do when we're working together in an organization like this. I want to explain to you a little about where money like this goes. For instance, just the sound system, so that you could all hear today, and we needed a big enough one because we were certain you would all come, cost $5,000. In order to have a stage that would stand up under the storms and under this amount of equipment, cost another $3,500. The national promotion, in order to make sure that gay people, lesbians all over this country and in other nations knew that this was going on, so that they would have a right to decide whether to come or not, cost at least $30,000. And the travel to bring people here to put on the event cost another $4,000, and on and on and on. We're not talking about a small budget, nor were we talking about a small rally. So please, when the buckets come around, if you can really commit yourself, they're boxes, sorry, boxes, make sure that you put in as much as you can possibly afford. Now, when you come to trying to decide how much you can afford, it's always a kind of a difficult thing, because it's easier to get away with putting in really less than you can afford. But think about what you would pay if you went out to dinner on the most wonderful day of your life. Think about what you would pay if you were going to the greatest film or cultural event ever to happen. Oh, the things that are going around now are plastic bags. Think of what you would pay if, in fact, you celebrate with liquor the cost of booze. Think of what you would pay if you went to a famous rock concert. Think of what you would pay to buy new clothes. None of those things I've mentioned would be under five, and you would probably do it on the most wonderful day of your life without thinking. So if you can put $5, $10, $20, $30, $40, $50 in those bags, knowing that what you're doing is creating a situation that over a long period of time will allow you to be a free person in this society, it's a very small price to pay. And we need you to really think about it for a moment and make that kind of an economic commitment. If the money is not raised, it will put a lot of the organizers who personally put their necks out to organize this thing in grave economic jeopardy. And this was something that, although they put all the energy into organizing it, we all, as well as people at home, have benefited from it. So please think about it and make a very personal commitment when those cans come by. I want to read a telegram to you and then ask you to all sing one song together while the buckets are going around, so that the big plastic bags, rather. The telegram comes from Jane Fonda and Tom Hayden. It says, "We totally support the struggle of gay men and lesbians in America to throw off the shackles of social and economic discrimination. The defeating of the Briggs Initiative in California was an important sign that a majority of the voters, once informed, are beginning to see that the gay and lesbian struggle is one that affects a huge percentage of the population, either as gay people or as the family and friends of gays. Best wishes for a powerful and effective day, Jane Fonda and Tom Hayden." This is a song that many of us grew up with, that we became well known by a woman who was a cultural role model for many of us. And although she was not known as a political woman, rather as a performing artist, the concepts in her song live on forever, and I ask you to very seriously and tenderly sing this song with me. Somewhere over the rainbow,
I heard of once in a lullaby. Somewhere over the rainbow skies are blue.
We've been here now into 2 hours. Do you still have the spirit? Do you still have the spirit? Are you ready to continue? I want you to notice that I've changed drag a little bit. I came up here in kind of Texas outfit, but I've changed into a jailhouse uniform. How many of you have ever been arrested for being a gay person? How many of you know people who have been oppressed by the legal system because they're a gay man or a lesbian? How many of you swear that will never happen again? Do you realize that this night in Midwestern, Southern, Western, Northern, Eastern cities of this country, there are gay men and lesbians in jails and prisons that want to be here, but they cannot be here. As an ex-convict, I say we have not forgotten them. In case you've forgotten, I'm not a big star. My name's just Ray Hill, and I'm from Houston, Texas. And coming from Houston, Texas, I'm very proud of the work that my brothers and sisters are doing there relative to the freedoms of gay men and lesbians. And in that process, just 1 year ago, during Gay Pride Week, we held what was called Town Meeting One. And that was an area where we got together, 4,500 strong of every known description in their ethnic makeup of our city. And we took votes and listened to resolutions on what are going to be the priorities and what are going to be the strategies. Part of that process brought forth a man whose bond with me is closer than brotherhood, whose bond with me is closer than any known human emotion. The Reverend Dr. Charles Law has been selected by the Cultural Committee to express points of view relative to the meaning and the purpose of this entity. I introduce with great pride and joy my good friend, Charles Law.
For the next few moments, I want to share with you my thoughts about the challenges of the gay movement in the 1980s. And I think that challenge is integration and not assimilation. About 15 years ago, it had become quite popular for white and black sociologists, psychologists, social theorists, and the popular of the day philosophers to attempt to describe and catalog to the world what black people were and what it was like to be black. In reading those accounts that tended to proliferate the sociological and psychological literature in the latter part of the 1960s and entering in the 1970s, I found little that had been written that made me really understand and feel a sensitivity of being black, or any that I would consider to be profound in this presentation. I say that because it is impossible to me to tell me what it is like to be black if you are not black. And the problems that plagued black people then have not changed. The traumas and confrontations of black people then have not subsided. Moreover, the issues are still the same. What black people needed then and need now is an unsympathetic, unbiased, and just opportunity to experience freedom, to have a job, to support a family, to make a decent living, and to share in the full measure of the American dream. I cited those particular incidents for specific comparisons because it had once again become popular in the latter years of this decade for sociologists and psychologists to attempt to espouse of the nature of gay people and what it is like to be gay. And we had gone through one period where it was felt that all gay people were alike and operated from the same motives, to discovering that now there are homosexualities and that gay people differ distinctively from each other. I still contend that it is impossible to me for someone who is not gay to describe the dynamics and perplexities of being gay in America. And I feel that the situations that have characterized the black movement, especially after the death of Dr. King, are beginning to characterize the gay movement. I'm afraid that gay people will find themselves 10 years after the death of Harvey Milk in much the same way that black people are finding themselves 10 years after the death of Dr. King, not having achieved anything. The processes that have come forth from the movement was directed toward the large segment of black people, and only a small segment benefited from that. And those black people who reflected the analytical, interpretive, literary, and aesthetic attributes of that society were accepted as being black, and the dirty niggers in America are still living in ghettos and are still suffering from the deprecating pressures of this country. And I'm afraid that we will find that those gay people who do not come across as being offensively gay, militantly gay, obviously gay, adamantly gay, or admittedly gay will be the ones to reap the benefits of the open, heartfelt expression of this hypocritical society. And it will be those individuals who will reap the benefits of this struggle and the sacrifice of all of you and of Harvey Milk. And the real sissies and the butch women in this country will still have to live in gay ghettos and not have achieved the true import of this movement. As black people have allowed and are allowing the death of Dr. King to be in vain, gay people can't allow the death of Harvey Milk to be in vain. I say this to you now because I am observing some things happening in this country that some people view as being favorable or positive, but I see it as being a detriment to this movement. There appears to be a general theme now that nobody really worries whether you are gay. Just go on and do your thing. And that is quite true. No one in America is concerned as to whether you are gay. No one is concerned whether a gay person loses his job. No one is concerned whether a gay person can obtain equal housing. No one is concerned whether a gay person is harassed in his community. No one is concerned whether a gay person suffers from the blatant and perpetrating actions of local police forces. No one is concerned whether the laws of this country are slandered against gay people and invade their homes and their private lives. No one is concerned about the continual threats that override and oppress gay people every day. And I'm saying that there's a need for a concern, and I feel that we are expressing that need today. We are saying that we are concerned about gay people. We are concerned that gay people are discriminated against in employment. We are concerned that gay people are discriminated against in housing. We are concerned that gay people are harassed and tormented in their communities. And we are expressing that concern today. It is because of these issues and needs that are pressing upon us that this has to be the first step in an initiative to establish an organized movement to attain the full rights and freedoms of gay people in this country. The culmination of this initiative should be shown in a national conference of gay rights to be held in the year 1981. At this time, we should bring together all of our talents and our forces, identify the issues and the problems, identify the sources of conflict and the obstruction to our rights, and together with the various segments in the larger society, present a comprehensive plan to end discrimination against gay people in this country. This effort can affect the reality of the demands that are accompanying this march today. Once we have done that, then we will have begun to realize the dream that Harvey Milk saw. I believe that Harvey Milk went to the mountaintop of America. I believe that Harvey Milk had gone to the top of the mountain of discrimination. He had gone to the top of the mountain of oppression. He had gone to the top of the mountain of psychological and societal debasement. And I believe that Harvey Milk, from the top of that mountain, looked down on Wichita, looked down on Kansas City, looked down on Dade County, looked down on Oklahoma, looked down on Seattle, looked down on Texas, looked down on the Supreme Court and the Congress. And I believe that Harvey Milk saw gay people will one day be full, free, and equal citizens in this country. And it is our responsibility to come out of the wilderness, not to wander and meander and linger in the wilderness of despair, but to come out and realize the dream, realize the promised land, and gather our strength, our fortitude, our creativity, our initiative, and our hope, and go into that promised land of dignity, pride, and respect. Thank you.
They tell me that Anita Bryant wants to outlaw homosexuality in this land. And I'm not going to tolerate that, because there were homosexuals on this land before the white folk came that she is a member of. And one of them is going to speak now from the American Indian Gay Movement. It is my pleasure to introduce Paula Gunn-Allen.
All right. I'm here as a gay American Indian, and I'm very proud to represent the people who have the longest gay history in this hemisphere. Long before the patriarchy brought its separation and its hate and its walls to this land, homosexuality and lesbianism were revered and honored among their people. It was we who gave to our people their medicine. It was we who gave to our people their names. It was we who gave to our people their power. And when the white man came, the people who were killed, the people who were the first to be killed, were the homosexual and the lesbian medicine people of all of the tribes. And today I see thousands, hundreds of thousands of you affirming at last the oldest and the most important tradition of this earth that you stand on. We are here to celebrate the right of all human beings to respect, the right of all human beings to live in dignity, the right of all human beings to our liberty. And we here today, finally we see many Americans of many ages, of many colors, of many kinds of life, saying, we will be free. And that is what I come to you to say today. I've often thought that the root of the horror which we live in this society, on this earth today, is best symbolized by that right there. The phallocentric civilization of the universe. There it is. And I have a poem that I would like to close with that I'd like to read to the Washington Monument. The poem is entitled, It Seems That Tampax Contains Asbestos.